Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with Dr. Joyce Lee Iannotti, division chief of both the Stroke Center and Comprehensive Sleep Center at Barrow Neurological Institute, to discuss her presentation from the 2025 Sleep Annual Meeting around the glymphatic system's role in stroke and stroke recovery. In our discussion, Lee Iannotti outlined the science behind this brain cleansing pathway, its dependence on sleep quality, and how its dysfunction may worsen outcomes in both ischemic and hemorrhagic stroke. In addition, she detailed practical, evidence-based strategies for optimizing glymphatic clearance, as well as highlighted major gaps in clinician awareness regarding this topic. Let's dive into it.
Well, let me start off by telling you a little bit about the glymphatic system, and I'm going to break it down because there's a lot of physics and a lot of anatomy involved. But at the very basic level, when I describe the glymphatic system to my patients, I describe it as a drainage system where you can imagine little people that are shoveling the waste out of your brain. And the glymphatic system is most productive and most efficient in sleep. A lot of research has implicated that is actually slow wave sleep, which is stage 3 and 4, and REM sleep, where your glymphatic system is most active. So that is the glymphatic system. You and I have a glymphatic system. While we're awake, we're actually building up tau and amyloid proteins in our brain right now. And then hopefully, if we get a good night's sleep tonight, fingers crossed, the little men are at work and they're actually getting rid of all of that waste that is building up as we speak. Same in stroke patients. So there's a lot of literature. And Marco, I do want to tell you that a lot of the literature in stroke in the glymphatic system is mostly in animal models right now, but it is moving to human models as well. And initially in animal models, this is done by Dr. Iliff at University of Washington, has actually showed there's a lot of impairment in the glymphatic or the detox system immediately after stroke. So we know that that is definitely a problem.
I'm also curious, is there anything that we can do now? Obviously, like you mentioned, it's kind of early stages in terms of the research settings, but impacting the glymphatic system and the subsequent risk to stroke, is it just mainly just telling people to sleep better or things of that sort? Or just what are ways that we can kind of have an actual effect on the glymphatic system to kind of trickle down some more positive effects with stroke risk and things of that sort?
Of course. So let's talk about primary prevention. So these are people who have not had a stroke yet. And there's a lot of literature showing that just lifestyle modification, so watching what we eat, recommending a Mediterranean diet, exercising at least for 30 minutes, 4 times a week. Sleep is really important. And it's not only the durations of sleep, but also the quality of sleep, treating sleep apnea. We can't forget that. All of those things are going to prevent stroke. And a lot of it has to do with, again, the waste products that are building up in your system during the day, which the glymphatic system clears. It has a lot to do with neuroinflammation, and that's been implicated in the glymphatic system as well. So all of those things are important before we have a stroke. And I see a lot of strokes in my practice. So I really want to reiterate that we could do more to prevent people from showing up to the emergency department with acute stroke syndromes. I want to kind of pivot, Marco, if it's okay, and talk about once a stroke happens, what happens to the glymphatic system? So in animal models and early human models, they've actually shown that the glymphatic system is impaired immediately following the stroke. And what does that mean for the stroke patient? So I'm going to start with the bleeding strokes. So these are either subarachnoid hemorrhages from an aneurysm bursting or intracerebral hemorrhages, which are from an artery bursting, usually related to high blood pressure. Once that happens, you have blood sitting there, right, in your brain. It's just sitting there. And the longer it sits there, it's actually going to cause neuronal damage and the neurons to die. But that's where the glymphatic system comes into play. And if the glymphatic system is really revved up, it's going to reabsorb the blood faster, it's going to reduce that neuroinflammation, and it's going to help people recover better, right? So I want to talk about hemorrhagic strokes first. And the cool research that, quite frankly, I didn't know about until I prepared for this presentation. So in this presentation, I do talk about how once a stroke happens, let's start with bleeding strokes, ways you can boost the glymphatic system. And believe it or not, it's as simple as position of sleep. So one is telling our intracerebral hemorrhage or subarachnoid patients to not sleep on their back and to sleep on either the right or left side. And the studies have shown that that actually revs up the clearance and detoxes the brain. The second thing is to avoid sleep deprivation. In our intracerebral patients and our subarachnoid patients, 60% of them have trouble sleeping, whether it's because they're in shock about the initial diagnosis or just being in the ICU, right, in the intensive care unit where there's bells and whistles. And that alone is taking away from the time that the glymphatic system can reabsorb the blood. I'm going to move to clotting strokes, which are ischemic strokes, and that's 85% of the strokes we see. In this stroke, it is very devastating. You have a clot that's sitting there. You have a stenosis of an artery where it's narrowed, and your brain is not getting enough blood flow. In that process, when that happens, part of the brain starts dying. It only takes about 6 minutes for neurons to start dying without adequate blood flow. And the glymphatic system is really important in avoiding what we call cerebral edema. So once those neurons start dying, all the water starts resorbing. And guess what? It starts swelling the brain. But it's encapsulated by the skull, right? So when your brain starts expanding and it's entrapped by the skull, everything moves downwards. And it starts compressing on things like the medulla and the brainstem, which is your center for respirations and involuntary things like heart rate, and it can be fatal. So we know that by preserving the glymphatic system, by increasing the blood flow, so the lymphatic vessels are draining all of that detoxification, that we could early in the phases of ischemic stroke prevent brain swelling. And that's amazing. We've been looking for a solution for over 3 decades to prevent a surgeon from having to remove the skull flap, which is called a decompressive hemicraniectomy. And it can be a very serious surgery with not so great outcomes, unfortunately.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Lee Iannotti to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on July 7th, the FDA accepted Denali Therapeutics' biologics license application for tivanofusp alfa as a potential treatment for Hunter syndrome, a rare genetic lysosomal disease. Along with granting priority acceptance review, the agency also assigned the therapy a PDUFA date of January 5th, 2026 for a decision to be made. Days later, on July 9th, the FDA approved an updated label for donanemab, a medication for early-stage Alzheimer's disease, to now include a new recommended titration dosing schedule, which may lead to lowering risk of amyloid-related imaging abnormalities, or ARIA. The latest updated label, which involves a more gradual titration, was based on findings from the Trailblazer ALS 6 trial. And lastly, on the same day, the FDA approved the use of Incytek's Exablate Neuro Platform for staged bilateral polythalamic tractomy in patients with advanced Parkinson's disease. The expanded indication covers both the initial and subsequent procedures to enable comprehensible bilateral treatment. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Lee Iannotti.
Well, I mean, it's amazing that we're having the conversation that we can actually continue to help these patients even after their first initial stroke, which I think has been a theme in stroke the last 10, 15 years or so. I know that especially around the conversations around smoking was a big thing where people thought, you know, I had a stroke and there's no chance that I could improve myself, when there's been a lot of studies to show that if you cut down on smoking, you can actually lower your chance of recurrent stroke and things of that sort. So very, very interesting to say the least. And I know you kind of touched upon it a little bit there for a second in your response, but are there any pharmacologic or targeted ways that we can affect the glymphatic system? Just talk a little bit about that potential. And I know you mentioned that we're kind of early in this research for stroke-wise, but where do we kind of stand on that potential idea?
That is such a great question, and it's so insightful. So there has been work, a lot of work from Washington University, and it's by Brendan Lucy and his group. And what they've shown is that a new class of insomnia medications, they're called sedative hypnotics, and the specific name are called what we call DORAs, which are dual orexin receptor antagonists. And an example of that that has been studied extensively is suvorexant. And what Lucy's group did was that they looked at patients who were controls. These weren't stroke patients, but those on suvorexant or a DORA and those without. And what they found was that they could actually measure the cerebrospinal fluid levels of amyloid and tau, and there is considerable reduction in those patients on DORAs, likely related to increased sleep quality and more slow wave sleep and REM sleep as well. So that is a particular field of interest for me in stroke patients. 60%, we talked about, aren't sleeping well after their stroke, and not only in the acute phase, but for like up to a year after. So if we can institute something like DORAs and rev up their glymphatic system, maybe they will have a better outcome and recovery. There's also another study looking at fish oil, so omega-3. Honestly, when I look at the checklist, Marklo, fish oil is not on there. So the checklist that we make sure that we're kind of checking off when patients are discharged from stroke is making sure they're on an aspirin or a blood thinner like Coumadin or one of the novel anticoagulants. It's a statin, so Lipitor for cholesterol control. It's managing their diabetes, of course, and then putting them on a blood pressure medicine, most likely an ACE inhibitor. I'd love to add to that list, now that we have this data that we've talked about, maybe fish oil, maybe a DORA, maybe looking at their sleep quality, maybe asking them to sleep on their side and not their back. But this would allow us to tell them, hey, the medications are really important, but lifestyle is also just as important, and sleep should be at the top of the list, just like diabetes, high cholesterol, and hypertension.
I mean, I think sleep is becoming one of those sort of pillars of health a little bit more over the last 10 years or so. And that kind of leads me to my next question. Obviously, you are very well versed in the understandings and the interplay between the glymphatic system and what it can do for stroke patients. But what is your assessment of the community and their education level on when patients are getting discharged? You mentioned a few things right there about what we should be including going forward, but from a clinical community's perspective, is that something that we're doing right now? And how can we kind of raise the education levels for clinicians to understand that maybe we should be incorporating these few extra things for stroke patients and why they're important per se?
I agree. Again, another insightful question. So I will bring up that we have a lot of work to do because sleep is undervalued. In the general population, in Americans, we don't prioritize sleep, but even in neurology patients. And as neurologists, as clinicians who are seeing these patients, there's so much data, Marco, showing that sleep impacts outcomes. So headache, traumatic brain injury, concussion, epilepsy, with SUDEP, right? With multiple sclerosis, with Parkinson's patients, with Alzheimer's, dementia. Good sleep can really affect their quality of life. I'm going to bring up an example of a study that was done by Devin Brown at the University of Michigan, and this is looking at obstructive sleep apnea and stroke, which has been really magnified in all circles. And there was a recent survey, and it showed that amongst stroke neurologists, I'm going to have you guess, Marco, how many stroke neurologists percentage-wise are screening for just obstructive sleep apnea?
I would say maybe 10%.
Okay. You're close. Yeah, it was 17%. Which is abysmal, right? Because we know that obstructive sleep apnea mechanistically can cause strokes. So if we don't have enough people asking about sleep apnea, they're definitely not asking about sleep in general. So my big ask to all neurologists, primary care doctors, anybody who contacts especially stroke patients, is just ask about sleep. How are you sleeping? It doesn't have to be all about sleep apnea. It could be poor quality sleep, insomnia, restless legs, not unrefreshing sleep. So waking up and just feeling tired. And if they say yes, you can order a home sleep study to rule out sleep apnea, but call your friendly sleep specialist. And we are very happy to help these patients because we know that it is a make it or break it situation in terms of preventing other neurologic devastation in the future.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.